Chapter 8, The Acts of Man Continued.
A miner was leaving his home for his work when he heard his little girl scream. And then as he knelt by the little girl's bed,
so the water has improved.
Oh, Daddy, I have had such a dream.
Since they done the reclamation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Daddy,
see, what they did, they drained these humongous water holes back here in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
They had acid in it, a lot of coliform. It had a lot of bacteria in it. And when we'd get these heavy rains, these holes of water would break loose or overflow, you know, and it'd kill everything in the creek.
I dreamed that the mine was all sealed with fire. The men had all fought for their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, they go fishing, but now we had a mine blow out here about 2 years ago. And what that is, that's a deep mine that's been closed off. And occasionally the top will fall down, you know, and it's like a mine blowout. And it turned the lake orange. The water was bad, the lake was just orange. And it
over Martin's Fork?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Cranks Creek Lake.
Mm-hmm.
But it killed everything in it.
I mean, it's as if the land was in a state of like permanent war.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. These old mines, you know, where they've got timbers and, well, even roof boats, the top will come down and sit down on the bottom, and that's when the water goes. It's bad.
Our dreams have so often come true. Oh, Daddy, dear Daddy, please don't go away. We never could live without you.
You were here when the flood came to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, we did own the property up where they stripped the mines at, where they done strip mining. So, 75, we sold it. They was going to strip mine it. I didn't have money, you know, to fight them in court, which it wouldn't have done me any good anyway. I owned the surface rights, but I didn't own the mineral rights. I had 42 acres more or less. And, well, they come in there one time to start stripping before. I mean, I come in from work. They'd been trying to buy the property from me, and I wouldn't sell. So I come in from work, and they'd move their equipment in, going to start the next morning. So the next morning, I called Noe, and I told him, I'll be late tomorrow coming in to work. If you need a load of coal haul before I get there, you go ahead and haul it. I said, I'll be late. I got something I have to do. So I go down and I park my car across the road there. See, it was private road. They didn't even have right of way across me to come across my property. And I blocked the road, and they come in. I ask them what the hell they think was going on. We're going to start stripping today. I said, I don't think so. I said, this property's mine. I said, I want to see your contract. You got a right of way to come across this property. I want to see it. It's county property. It's county road. I said, no, this is private. I said, from where my line starts down there to where my line ends up here is private. And I said, you see that sign there? It said no trespassing. And I said, I'll tell you for what now. I'm going on to work. But when I come in from work today, I don't want to see no equipment up there. I went all out of here, and I don't want you to linger till tomorrow to take it out. And I said, tell you what, I got a brand new 30-30. I hanging up there on the wall, and I said, I'll tell you, you can replace that piece of machinery with money over. I said, but a good operator, it's hard to replace him, because when he sticks that dozer blade in my property, I'm going to brain him off of there. I said, now I've tried to be fair with you people. I said, deep mining, I didn't mind. I let them deep mine and pay me wheel rights coming out over my property. I said, but when it comes to strip mining, I don't want it, and I'm going to fight it, and I tried to get some people to start helping me fight it. But nobody would help me. They told me they was going to level it off and make an airport up there. And I mean, I try to get everybody that lived in the area up there to start then helping me fight strip mine. Nobody wanted. Okay, I moved out of there in 75.
You know, one of the things that what struck me when I was reading the transcriptions for the interviews was that you asked a lot of questions about the coal mines and the strikes. And almost inevitably, they either didn't remember or came from a different community, or it seemed that your focus still was on trying to piece back together the story of struggle during the coal mining era, and it wasn't there. And it struck me that here you are in my image of Harlan County, USA, coming from New York and Philadelphia, is still one of Appalachia in this notion of a community frozen in time. And that really, they're not like that. That the oral traditions and that history of storytelling and music making that draws academics and folklorists and musicians and others back to Appalachia is really disappearing. Or that one is disappearing and another one is emerging that has Vietnam in it and has the environmental movement and the children's health movement and all of the rest of it. And that, the coal mining Harlan County that we academics loved is a relic that is, it's not there to be mined anymore.
How did this thriving community relate to the fact that there, at the same time, it was also a troubled community? That there was trouble, there was struggles, strikes, conflict.
I was never involved, or my family was never involved in any way in any of those.
But like when, for instance, when they sent in the National Guard, which I think was both in 37 and 39,
yes.
They were stationed in town as well.
Yes, and I can remember seeing them march down Main Street. That was, I guess, in 39.
Mm-hmm. And what were your reactions then at that time? Did you feel that there's a civil war going on? How did you react?
No, I didn't feel exactly like that. Of course, I was a teenager,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was somehow, this might sound terrible to say, but somehow it was a little bit exciting.
Well, it always is.
You know, it just seemed that...
20 years ago is a relic that is...
Well,
it's not there to be mined anymore.
The way I put it in that seminar was maybe the class struggle is over and we lost, and so we're playing another game. Well, I'll put it this way: even though it's just one county, it's very diversified, and. On this particular trip, I've concentrated more on the people I knew best, and these people are from Cranks Creek and Martin's Fork, and that is not where most of the union organizing took place. The Battle of Everts in the 30s, Everts is, it's almost an hour's drive to go to Everts from there. And a lot of the other things were in Straight Creek. And the Brookside strike was on Clover's Fork, which is around Everett's. So this particular corner of the county has less of that tradition. Although at least one of the great battles in 41 took place right there, and they talk about it in a number of interviews. Actually, one of the first people Annie took me to see was her uncle, who had been wounded in that battle, in the battle of Crummies.
Well, I don't know exactly. I got three items, and I wouldn't take nothing for none of them. We got an old 41 Colt's pistol, that was used in the Union organizing. It belonged to Chester's third grandfather, Dale. And it was patented in 1888, 92, and 93. There ain't no way I'd get rid of that gun.
How was it used?
It was used in Union organizing. There was 5 men killed in one night with it.
Where was it?
The men was killed right over here at Crummy's.
At Crummy's.
Mm-hmm. And then about...
Is it that battle that you told me about when that Uncle Pliny was in?
I'm not sure if Uncle Pliny was in that one or if it was before that.
Uncle Pliny's was in 1941.
Somewhere in that category. Yeah. But this one man killed 5 men with it in one night because it's got the handles notched. And then later, he dropped the gun and it went off and killed him.
I got a few guns, don't I? How about anywhere I reach, I'll pick one up, though. Maybe another one up there. And maybe another one.
So, you know, some paint together. Fragment from this person, fragment from that. But in order to get complete stories, you probably had to go somewhere else. Well, basically, the reason you read books, the reason you do interviews is you want to hear things you don't expect. You're not looking for confirmations, even though it feels good when you get them. You know, you need a nice balance of some confirmation and something will make you feel that you're in a new territory altogether. And I guess this has been part of the experience. I mean, if you talk to people who are in the book
site. The other things that we asked to get off-site soil sampling was, did you eat vegetables grown in the floodplain? Because the site is along the Cumberlands in the floodplain area, and we knew, especially in 77, everything was underwater. After that flood, people continued to raise vegetables along the floodplain there. There was like 5 feet of water inside the plant in 77 that washed all of the chemicals and things out into the community along the floodplain. So when the EPA came in to talk about doing off-site sampling, they said, well, the characteristics of the chemicals found here, they don't migrate very far. And we said, wait a minute, you know. And it doesn't have to actually flood for water to get into people's gardens and basements and stuff. And so we used that information because everybody that lived along the floodplain
raised a garden. About it, but
they don't now, but they did then.
And
they
that was up in Noe Branch.
So we knew that from research,
then by the end of that
some
year,
of the rooted vegetables would absorb some of the chemicals that were found on the site.
All the way around the head of the holler.
It was a possible pathway of exposure.
Back behind us and behind Lee and Day holler.
Four families, and we used that information to get them to
down
do
that
some
winter.
More off-site sampling.
And the next spring, we didn't have nowhere to raise a garden.
In the community.
It wouldn't even grow.
And we had some specific goals
enough corn
in mind.
To winter
I could pass these around also.
And enough
about
food,
getting
for
wells
us, basically, to keep us
soil
all
sampling. We wanted to know where folks were getting their water from.
We couldn't
because
grow
the company
anymore,
was
the
responsible
was
early
was
on under a consent order.
They
had to supply
a
public water system.
But
there was only part
to build back
of the community that was put on public water system, and everybody else is left on well water because the company determined right away they decided where the pollution stopped, okay? The company responsible for the problem said it stopped here, and so there's still like an ongoing investigation
here. We've
as
got
to actually
all kinds of
where
land
the,
it's not
the pollution
growable.
Has spread
you
in
can't
the
grow
community.
Food down.
So we've gotten some limited monitoring. The State Division
of
Water has been
more
responsive than the federal EPA, actually,
and
it's a federal Superfund site, in getting well water monitored. But we wanted to know how many
people and
then. Within this
like
area,
said,
we're still
you know,
left on well
going
water.
Up all the time.
So
people
when we
don't.
Yelled about testing wells and monitoring for pollution, we would know.
Make a garden.
I mean, we had a general idea because we know the community.
Now, we raised this garden here, so which is about an acre, we did this, acre and a half. And then
this is
Liddy left to see something go. So Chester tends that garden.
So there was many, many different things.
Well, he tends it.
That have come out of this and is
for beans
still
and
coming
stuff.
Out.
It's good.
One of the, I think the most beneficial things from a citizens group standpoint is we were able to interact with people that normally didn't come to meetings and rallies and public hearings and stuff, and find out why they didn't. It could be that
there was a time when people were organized about these
things. They wanted to participate, so then we were able to know what that reason was.
It seems to me
found a lot of fear.
That has been lost.
Folks that didn't participate. There was a lot of fear about getting involved and being vocal, fear of job loss and repercussions.
It's not lost. We're still fighting. A lot of people are not as active in it as
the
most active people on Cranks Creek in the first place is me and Becky.
Parents with
for a long time they wouldn't have sold their wimp with me and her because they thought, you know, we couldn't do
that. We've had a lot of support. We've had a really good interaction with workers.
Nobody listened to us, no way.
Also, which is very rare on environmental issues that
come find out.
You have plant workers that would work with an environmental.
It was a long, hard pull.
We found that in this situation,
but when you go into a strip mine,
workers didn't know that they were working in cancer-causing chemicals
for the other person, and you got two hillbilly women sets there that knows more than they do.
Next door to the plant,
I've heard them say that
because of that.
Let's call this quits as soon as we can, because they're more up to date than we are. You know, because we had done our research on it. Well, basically, what we'd done, we just took what we already knew. Mm-hmm. You know, but we did get figures and facts and things like that. And Becky gets nervous and I get mad, you know. So we kind of compliment each other. And she's kind of cautious about what she says. And I don't care what I say. So it works out. But then we have had some meetings where we'd have maybe 15 people go with us. But basically they feel intimidated by somebody with a big fancy suit on and a necktie. And I kind of feel like they put their britches on the same way I do, you know. But I never met nobody I was intimidated by.
I dreamed that the mine was all sealed with fire. The men had all fought for their lives.
I lost it. But anyway, she...
You're talking about the frontier is still there.
She talked about how when she was a child in the 50s, she said we were living in pioneer conditions. Log cabin in the woods. And on the other hand, they've had the Industrial Revolution. They've had it, as hard as it comes. And they had post-industrialism before anybody else got it. So, I mean, they were post-industrial in the 50s. So, I mean, it's all there. It's a nutshell.
Something is going to happen today. Oh, Daddy, don't go to the mine. Oh, Daddy, don't go to the mine today, for dreams have so often come true. Oh, Daddy, dear Daddy, please don't go away. We never could live without you.